TV Campfire Podcast.
I was like, yep, okay, so you win for the week.
We're here.
I hate to sound like a broken record.
Oh, no! We're fans.
It's one of the best things on television.
Oh! All right, we got you a hold of the
level. No, you didn't.
We talk TV.
That was the best scene ever. Like, that blew me away.
It was absolutely amazing. I just couldn't believe it.
Welcome to the show.
This is podcast number 613, and I'm Libya, your host. And this week we have returning guests.
Malik Alamine, Artistic Director of Griot Theater.
This is Tom, and I chair Visual and Media Arts at Palm Beach Atlantic University in Florida, and also host the Screen Time podcast on iTunes and Spotify.
This is Allison, and I write reviews for Six Degrees of Geek.
Hi, this is Yusun, and I'm costume designer and TV enthusiast from Los Angeles.
All right, Tom, hit us with the news. What you got?
ABC has announced that Floriana Lima from Supergirl is joining Grey's Anatomy season 21 for an arc playing a childhood friend of Dr. Owen Hunt. Amazon has announced that Brendan Gleeson and Jack Huston have been cast as series regular in Spider-Noir, the Spider-Man Noir series. AMC has announced that William Fichtner has joined Anne Rice's The Talamasca as Jasper. They've canceled Orphan Black Echoes after just one season. And their Shudder streaming service acquired the thriller The Rule of Jenny Pin with John Lithgow and Jeffrey Rush. Apple TV Plus canceled Time Bandits after just one season. And they've acquired the Spanish language mystery series Tú También Lo Harías. BBC has announced that Joanna Scanlon and Tamsin Grigg will star in Sally Wainwright's new BBC punk rock drama Riot Women. HBO has given a series order to Rachel Sennett's untitled comedy, and they picked up Industry for season 4. At Hulu, Glenn Powell's football comedy Chad Powers has added Clayne Crawford, Toby Huss, Colton Ryan, and Xavier Mills in recurring roles. Max has canceled Pretty Little Liars after two seasons. NBC announced The Irrational has cast Ron Canada as Alex and Kylie's father. Netflix, lots of news. Straight to series order for Thumblight, a corporate thriller set in Silicon Valley. Rosamund Pike is going to star. She's on the Wheel of Time as well. Black Mirror Season 7 added a bunch of people. The big names are Awkwafina, Peter Capaldi, Emma Corrin, Paul Giamatti, Rashida Jones, Chris O'Dowd, Issa Rae, Tracy Ellis Ross, and Harriet Walter. Charlie Hunnam will play notorious serial killer Ed Gein in Monster Season 3. John Bernthal and Pablo Schreiber have joined Tessa Thompson in the limited series adaptation of Alex Feeney's novel His and Hers. Crystal Fox, Sunita Mani, and Rebecca Rittenhouse have also joined the cast as regulars, and Maren Ireland will recur. Terry Metalis is the showrunner for the long-gestating Magic the Gathering animated series. Joe Manganiello has been cast as Mr. Zero in One Piece Season 2, and Lyra Abova as Miss Sunday. Maya Cech will play the blind earthbender Toph in Avatar The Last Airbender Season 2. Paramount Plus announced that Adriana Mitchell has been cast in Tracy Morgan's comedy series Crutch. And the JonBenet Ramsey limited series has added Garrett Hedlund, Allison Pill, Emily Mitchell, and Owen Teague. Peacock has announced that the new Office series has added Melvin Gregg from Snowfall, Chelsea Frey from Poker Face and the Cleaning Lady, and Ramona Young from the Santa Clarita Diet. They'll join previously announced Domhnall Gleeson and Sabrina Incapacitore. And finally, Sci-Fi has announced the adaptation of Revival, an Image comic series, has cast Melanie Scrifano, Romy Weltman, David James Elliott, and Andy McQueen.
Wow, that was a lot. Why don't
Netflix
I have a job?
Netflix keeps spending like a drunken sailor. Hey, one of these days, they're going to actually have to, you know, pay off their debt load.
Don't say that. That'll make this even harder. But anyway, let's get started with the shows. First up, we're going to talk Bad Monkey, and we're going to talk episodes 6 and 7. And episode 6, that's the episode where his best friend, the main guy's best friend, turns him over to the cops in a move that just, I mean, I get it, but then I don't get it because I was like, dude, does that mean we're not friends anymore? Like, that was a little touchy there. Like, and I like that his husband was even like, dude, I don't even know you.
I loved it.
I like that a lot.
I'll have to say, if you turn me over to the cops, we're not friends anymore, just so you know.
I wasn't considering it because I did feel that betrayal right in my chest. I was like, ooh.
Of course, yeah. The solution is don't do anything wrong.
I thought
But if your brother commits a crime, you just show up with a shovel and you're done.
It's like,
don't ask any questions.
It's like all that, right, that movie On the Town. It's like, which car are we taking? That's what you ask.
But right. I really loved the husband. I thought he was like a minor character that didn't really matter. But in that episode, I thought he stepped up, and I thought like the writing and his acting and his like chemistry between his husband, and then like even the way that he was with Yancey, you know what I mean? Like, you know, he was so sympathetic and he was very supportive.
Well, the thing is, also, they were all pretty sure he didn't do the murder.
Yeah,
like, everybody was like, we know you didn't do this, so why are you turning? He was like, oh, they'll figure it out. I was like, dude, you're a cop. You know that's not how this works.
I love the fact that the daughter's butterfly hairpin makes an inopportune reappearance an episode later.
Yes.
And I love the fact that they mention it. They hung a lantern on it in episode 6. And in episode 7, the narrator tells us, and it made a reappearance at a very inopportune time, or words to that effect.
I don't remember that, but go ahead. Talk about it. Go ahead.
When he gets cleared, they catch the bad cop, and then they put him in the back seat, and there the butterfly hairpin is, so he uses it to pick him up.
And well, what tripped me out, too, is the bad cop guy who set him up. He's like, oh, let me go to my office and get the other evidence that I have. And he just like split. I was like, are you
He
for
never
real?
Struck me as being the smart type.
Yeah, but just like, he just bailed. Like, I was like, oh my God, this dude just like ran.
I just thought that was hilarious, though. It's so perfect for this show. It's like, oh yeah, I've got that in my other coat pocket. Yeah, let me go get that. And he just runs. So,
and the fact that he didn't leave, though, and that he went to go get his cat, like his cat also was so perfect for the show.
They stake out the place where they know the cat is, and of course he shows up.
That actually made sense, because
security guard he got fired from episodes before, who's there, who gets shot, but eventually saves, you know, helps save the day.
Yeah, it does. It didn't make sense, and though that he didn't just have his wife pick the cat up. But I mean, then we wouldn't have had that whole chase sequence and everything else. I'd like to do like a little call out. There's like an MVP through this whole series that I don't think we've ever really mentioned before. And that's the narrator.
Oh, the narrator's great.
He's the guy on the boat. Like, that's so crazy.
Scott Glenn, right?
It's Tom Nowicki. He does the narration.
Oh. Yeah, and he gets introduced just in the fantastic. Pilot. Mm-hmm. He gets introduced in the pilot for like 5 minutes, and like we never see him again.
But then we
just hear his voice through the rest of the series, and I was like, how is he narrating? How does he know this information? Like, it's crazy.
I assume they'll wrap that up at the end. We'll suddenly, you know, after not seeing him through the whole series, we'll probably see him again, and it'll explain how he knows all this. But his narration is just so perfect for this. It really is.
It's pretty funny.
It's just funny as hell. Yeah. So
Malik,
you
have a comment. Oh, no. I agree with you.
I like his version, or like his acting of the voiceover, but I don't love voiceovers in general. And like, you know what I mean? So like, sometimes I find it's too much. Like, the voiceover, like I just kind of would rather watch the show. Like, occasionally it's fun and it's funny, but like, to me, some episodes there's more voiceover and then other episodes there isn't, so I feel like it's a little uneven. They can't decide when to use the, is this going to be a show that's like heavy voiceover, or is this going to be a show that like we used it in the beginning and now it kind of disappeared? Because there were like one or two episodes where like they didn't use the voiceover very much at all. And I thought, oh, okay, I guess they're going to kind of get rid of it. And then in the last episode, I think they used it quite a bit more. And then it kind of came back. And then I thought, oh, okay, now they're using it. So it throws me a little bit. Like, I enjoy it because it's good, but it's kind of annoying in the sense that it's like they can't decide if they're going to go in that direction or they're not. Mm-hmm. So it throws me a little bit in tone. Like, but because the show is all over the place anyway, and I mean that in a good way, that it's like kind of a comedy, it's kind of a mystery, and it's kind of a this, and it's kind of
I don't know how much
that.
Of a mystery it is, but go ahead. Well, Tom had
the best, use of voiceover. I mean, the rule of thumb is don't use voiceover unless the story is well told without it. And obviously, this is where it shows that you have a writing staff of many different people with different, slightly different styles. But the ironic counterpoint that the narrator brings a lot of times, like with the aforesaid butterfly hair clip, brilliant, brilliant. And the guy's fun, so. And plus, voiceover is a trope for detective stories going back decades.
Yes.
That is true. I hated the voiceover in the pilot. I hated
it. Yes, me too.
But I got, it grew on. It grew on me. But let's move on. I think overall. Oh,
we got to shout out Bonnie having to read her former high school lover's journal to figure out that he's a child and she's not, even though she acts like a spoiled teen sometimes.
The fact that she was like, I saw a manatee and it told me that I'm supposed to be with you forever. And then I read your journal and went, oh my God, you're a child. And then I said, never mind, and took off on a boat. Like, I can't figure out. First of all, I don't understand why this character's in this story at all. She doesn't add to, at least at this point, I don't see her value. And I'd rather never see her again. Like, that's how I feel about this particular character. So
I assume that she's going to, it's already been pointed out that this show is all over the place. And I have the feeling that, you know, even though I'm willing to ride with it, because even though she doesn't seem to be tying into the total story so far, I think that ultimately, yes, they're going to, her story is going to rope into the main narrative.
And I'm don't
willing
like her.
To wait for that. No, I don't like her as a person, but I mean...
No, I mean, even as a character, I don't like her. I don't like the story. I don't like anything with her. So whenever she's on screen, it irritates me. So
she's not my favorite component in the story, but I'm willing to get to allow this to just, you know, I'm just rolling with the story, basically, and confident that they're going to make all this make sense and make it worth my time.
All right, let's wrap this up. I think overall people are saying thumbs up for the last two episodes.
Definitely.
I felt more of a meaty in the middle because of the stuff that I said, which was the lady. I just really didn't like it. And some of the stuff, I feel like I want them to start wrapping this up. Like, let's go. Like, that's how I was starting to get a little impatient in these episodes. All right. Next up, we're going to talk Chaos. And we haven't talked about the show yet. And it's on Netflix. And it is starring
Jeff Goldblum.
Jeff Goldblum, thank you. He plays Zeus. And the premise of the show is that Greek gods are real. It is current day. And how would current day society deal with the gods being real people just interfering with their lives and you're having to worship them? And what does it mean about the soul and all this stuff? And then, you know, all this other stuff that they have going in. And what I liked about Jeff Goldblum is he's always playing like this funny kind of protagonist. And in this story, he is definitely 100% the villain of the piece. And but he's still charming. So he's like the charming villain of the piece. And I thought it's great. I am thoroughly, thoroughly enjoying Chaos. So who wants to start off? Malik, you want to take a stab and start us off?
I'll start off by saying that I am absolutely the target audience for this show. Because I grew up reading about Greek and Roman mythology and Egyptian mythology and have studied it and explored it ever since then. And I think, you know, part of what you alluded to is this kind of modern version of Greek mythology is really cool. I have to say, just in terms of setting the stage, this is primarily the story in terms of Greek mythology of Orpheus and Eurydice.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the base story that they're telling. The inclusion of Zeus and this question about Zeus dying is actually kind of a new twist that they've added for this television show.
Yeah, they've never had that as a possibility of Zeus dying. So yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so I'm thrilled to pieces by everything about this show, starting with Jeff Goldblum. I mean, you mentioned in terms of how his character is different, but he's got this incredible combination of vulnerability that you see. Mm-hmm. You see this true vulnerability and his power and his danger. So in the first episode, when he finds out that that they are blaspheming against him and how angry he gets, like, I was scared in that moment. it was pretty incredible. So I think you have to start with Jeff Goldblum in terms of why this show is successful, as well as just the original storytelling, how they're making it both modern and also keeping true to the story and characters from Greek mythology. Last thing I'll say before passing over the mic is, because this is really the core story is the Orpheus story. In most of my prior experiences with Orpheus, I don't actually like the character of Orpheus. And this is the first time I've seen an Orpheus story where I kind of dig this guy and I'm kind of rooting for him so far. That's
why I said you don't like Orpheus. I am not rooting for Orpheus.
Okay. I mean, he acts selfishly out of love, so to speak. But what I'm saying is,
narcissistically, but if you, not selfish.
Okay, so maybe you are picking up on those are kind of the narcissism are the threads that you get in other Orpheus stories. I will tell you, it's worse in other Orpheus stories. This is the most relatable Orpheus I've seen.
Interesting.
Okay.
I have to actually agree that I liked Orpheus throughout most of this, and I don't usually, it's the same thing. I'm sort of like, you have to be kidding. But he's, even though he's like this rock star, I think to a great degree, he gives up so much of himself, and he goes to such lengths that it transcends just simple narcissism. He misunderstands the extent to which Eurydice actually cares about him.
I feel like it's so strange. We watch the same thing, and my impression of him is the opposite of both of you guys. I find that fascinating.
I think it's because we come to this with history of other Orpheuses. So we're talking about him kind of in comparison.
I read the same books that you read, but anyway, go ahead. I'm just saying.
To get on another tack, I want to say that it does help if you have an understanding of the story that this is kind of, you know, satirizing. Mm-hmm. And you, if you have a background in Greek mythology and you know all of this, you know, inside out, that's great, because there's all these little tidbits and things that they Easter eggs that they leave you all over the shout outs and things like that they leave all over the place. So that's a lot of fun, but you don't have to.
I think that
this is accessible for people, even if you are not up on, you know, your Greek mythology, even if you're not familiar with the story of Orpheus and Eurydice, you're still going to, I think, enjoy this, because it's gorgeously mounted, it's incredibly acted, it's incredibly creative and well written and really funny. Their conception of these various characters is just hilarious in a lot of cases, and I just had a tremendous time watching this show, and I devoured the whole thing in a matter of like 2-3 days.
Go ahead, Tom.
Here's my question for you, and this, do they do more myth than just Orpheus and Eurydice?
They throw various things in.
Well, but is that like the kind of spine of season one?
Yeah, the spine is the spine, because they tell you that they have a narrator again, who is the guy, Prometheus.
Prometheus.
Yeah. He's the narrator this time around in this story, and he's basically telling you this is their story. But the point of view I came from was not from Orpheus's point of view. I came from Eurydice's point of view. My thing is, I saw stuff through her eyes, and you see that even in the beginning, in episode one, Orpheus is all consuming and just like suffocating her. And he's suffocating her because he's not listening to her. She's telling him, I don't want to do this. I don't want to be a part of your muse. I don't want to, like, she's telling him all of this information in the first episode. And he goes, but I love you so much that you should accept this. Like, and so that made me immediately not like him. So
that's a form of control.
Exactly. And so I really did not like his character from episode one. And the more I learned about him as you go on, it made me really dislike him even more. So I never had a moment where I was like, oh, he's so much, I totally get him and his vulnerability and he loves her and he sacrificed. I was like, no, every single thing he's doing is really for himself. There is nothing in there that he's doing that's for her. So that was my perspective of the story. And now go on to you guys. Sorry, I just needed to vent that.
My major complaint is, dude, there are entire stage plays and operas and films that are 2 hours long or less. You don't need, I would have interwoven multiple myths, not just use that one as the core myth for the 8 episodes, because you don't really have enough material for that.
I think it's premature to feel like it was being stretched out.
I don't know. We're only talking about the first two episodes.
I mean, I've only seen the first two episodes, but once he makes the deal to go to the underworld, and once she's in the underworld, in the myth, there's not that much story left.
No, there's story. Trust us. We've seen more. It really works.
I'm going to keep watching, but I just suspect that this is a case that my major complaint with another show we're going to talk about today is, know how many episodes you have, because you didn't have 8.
And here it works. It does.
It does.
I just want to say one more positive and one, maybe my only negative. So the positive is, I think it's brilliant, the relationship between Zeus and Prometheus, that Zeus is using a guy he is torturing for eternity to be his counselor and his therapist.
Like, you're my best friend.
Yeah, it is twisted, but brilliant. I love that aspect.
And I love that Prometheus is using that in the reverse, where he's like, oh, I'll give you this advice, as he's actually manipulating Zeus to fulfill the prophecy that he's trying to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that push and pull between them. It's fantastic.
Yeah. And then the one negative I feel is, I don't think they know what to do with Dionysus.
Feel confident.
What?
Feel confident that they do know what they're going to do with him.
No, I'm talking about what I've seen. What I've seen tells me they don't know what to do with him in terms of, I think they are trying to establish his character, but a lot of the elements of his scenes are, for me, the weakest elements of the show so far. So I'm not talking about predicting the future. I'm just talking about what I've seen so far.
That's fair. Okay. I kind of liked him because he was a nice counterpoint to the absolute power and arrogance of the rest of the gods. He was just
super vulnerable. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's like, yeah, I mean, he's the only one who seems to have any real compassion for the human beings who worship them. And that really, I thought, okay, well, that's like an end to his character. So I really like following that. And shout out
to Janet McTeer as Hera, because she is almost like,
she's all the time.
She's scary.
She's scary.
Awful, evil.
And the thing is, they always make Hera the villain in these stories. And what I like in this is, she reminds people why she's the villain, and it's Zeus. Zeus is the reason why she's the villain.
He's a terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I thought that's pretty good. So anyway,
just last thing on that, her with the baby and the pregnancy, that was
crazy
and fierce. Mm-hmm. And my goodness,
that was crazy. Yeah. All right, let's wrap that up. I think we're saying thumbs up so far.
Way up. Yeah. Way up.
All right, next up, we're going to talk about Slow Horses, and we're going to talk about the first two episodes of that. And I think there's been 3 episodes that aired, and I know I've watched all 3. I don't remember where episode 2 ended for Slow Horses.
Oh, two ended with River getting hit on the head in France.
Thank you. All right.
So the house burning down and all of that.
I love that. Yeah.
So let's start at the beginning, which is the grandfather, Like, basically, David. This dude shows up, like, oh, granddad, I'm running you a bath. And he just, like, runs in. And I like that the granddad goes and looks at the picture of his grandson. He saw this guy go by, looks at the picture of his grandson. He's like, huh, that doesn't look right. And so then he goes up and he goes, you're not River, but we never see him. And then he shoots him. And I mean, as a viewer of the show, we know that he really didn't shoot River. We're pretty sure. But they ran that mystery for 20 minutes trying to make us believe that he really did shoot River. And I was like, why are you guys messing with us? Why are you messing with us?
Well, because you can. That's it. And this show could go either way. It's not like they haven't killed off main characters before.
I know. That was also what was running through my brain. I was like, well, they have killed main characters before.
I love
before.
Luisa's guilt when they think River's dead, because she's the one who said, you know, talk to your grandfather. Mm-hmm. So she's thinking she got him killed. And calls him out for always trying to play the hero, which I'm thinking, hey, they listened to our podcast last week.
So, for me overall, I appreciated the show. I appreciated the premiere. I did not find it convincing enough that I was ever worried that River was dead.
I wasn't really either.
It's false stakes.
Yeah, it was so to me, that was kind of a weakness of, that was a weakness of the premise. I understood the premise. I liked it. I would have liked them to make me believe it a little more. And even to when Jackson Lamb, he clearly is not worried that River is dead either.
Thank you.
Like, make me believe it. You can't obscure the person's face and have him die and have Jackson not worried about him. Do one or the other. Because with both of them combined, I was never worried that he was dead.
When has Jackson ever shown real remorse over anybody dying? I mean, that's the thing.
For any of his slow horses.
We know that deep down he actually cares about his people, and he will, you know, if he was dead, he would have avenged him. And, you know, that now that he's not, he's trying to locate him and help him. But I mean, Jackson's never going to let that out.
It wasn't an emotional response that I was lacking. It was literally the questions he was asking and the statements he was making. To me, it was very clear he didn't think he was dead. I didn't see him mourn and put flowers on his grave or anything like that.
I was okay with the way they handled it, because the way, as I said, they've killed off main characters before. I was prepared if they decided that was the way they were ignominiously going to have River go out. Okay. I didn't think it was likely, but I figured, you know, this show. So I was pretty sure he wasn't gone,
It's so funny. One of my friends is behind. He's on season 2 of Slow Horses. And he was telling me, he's like, yeah, the guy that likes the black agent. And I was like, River? And she was like, he was like, no, the other one. And he's like, the curly haired one. And I was like, I didn't know what he was talking about. It was one of the other main characters who got killed. And I
who doesn't survive.
The one who was off by the Russians. Yeah.
Yeah. And I almost gave it away. Because I was like, you mean the guy that got killed? And I almost said that out loud. And I was like, oh, that guy, right?
Oh yeah.
Sorry, I got it mixed up in my head, and I tried to cover it up. Oh my god! But anyway,
can
Tom,
we just give
ahead.
A shout out to James Callis, the new first desk, for not seeming to have aged a day in the 20 years since Battlestar Galactica, and still playing a weasel?
Oh my god!
Oh, but I love his character.
Yeah,
I love.
He's a political weasel, but a weasel nonetheless.
Yeah.
Well, he's just so vacant, though. I mean, he's so clearly out of his element, and
so incompetent.
It's just ridiculous. He's almost totally clueless, and the idea that he was put in this position over her is so so egregiously awful, and just you could just see the contempt. Just oozing out of her, you know. It's just great.
And then what was so great, I don't know, wait, is that the right episode where she made him sign the documents? That's episode 2, right?
Yes.
So she has him sign all this. She was like, oh, it's for this, don't worry about it, you don't even need to bother reading it. And of course she didn't even say that. He's like signing stuff, not paying attention at all to what he's signing. And then she brings it back to him. He's like, oh, this document you signed that now makes you culpable to everything that I've done.
You took full culpability for everything.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. But I just, such an idiot. Anyway, so let's get to River in the second episode where we finally reveal that, yes, River's alive. We all knew that. So he's following the clues of the guy who his grandfather killed to figure out who's trying to kill his grandfather, which totally makes sense. And except the part where he does it by himself because he's an idiot.
Not only that, but when the team finally learns that he's alive, they're like, oh, we're not going to help him because he didn't ask for help. That seems a bit silly.
Well, that was Jackson. The rest of them wanted to help. Lamb was like, no, he didn't ask us. Yeah. So, but the rest of them were like, we should back him up. And
so they're like, okay. Jackson says no. So they're like, okay, we'll just hang out. Well, that feels a little weird to me too, but they did that in order for us to have the rest of the episode where he's in all of this danger by himself.
He's such an idiot. My thing is, I would think that what are we in season four? Like, dude, has he not learned anything in the first three seasons?
No.
The whole reason that he's in Slow House or Slow Horses is
to be fair, what's his face set him up?
Spider set him up. Yeah.
Spider did set him up a little bit, but he still did that whole hero syndrome thing. He still ran off to go save the day.
Like, which Louisa told him about in 401, and he's still doing it.
I'm just saying, that is his
MO.
His crypt, yes, his MO, and it's never served him.
Ever.
It has never served him.
It always bites him in the butt. Always.
Yeah.
Which is why neither his team or his boss should feel confident in his ability to manage this by himself.
That is also very true.
Well, I think part of what Lamb is thinking of is he doesn't want to get the rest of his team sucked into what, you know, River is doing. Yeah, because he doesn't, I mean, it takes him a while before he even finds out where he is, much less what he's doing.
What's going on, right?
Yeah, so, and I love the fact, by the way, that the first thing that he did was go to Standish.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was perfect.
Standish is awesome.
She is. Yes.
Although when she finds out what Lamb did, I have a feeling they're on a collision course.
Oh yeah, I forgot she still doesn't know. She still doesn't know, right?
Yeah, I don't know when that's going to happen. I keep expecting that.
That's a ticking time bomb that we as the audience know that the characters will eventually get there.
That's so crazy. Anything else before we move on about these first two episodes
for them winning best drama at the Emmys last week? That's pretty cool. And that was not expected.
They didn't win best drama.
Best writing.
Thank you.
Best writing for a drama series.
Thank you.
The other Will Smith.
Yes. The other Will Smith. He gets a lot of jokes out of that. All his interviews.
Oh, yeah, he does.
Jokes the whole night.
By the way, we didn't actually talk about the Emmys up front, but maybe that'll be another podcast.
Yeah.
we didn't. But I think these Slow Horses has been great. The next episode I've seen, episode three, is really, it's good. It's really hitting its stride. And I just love this show. And it's that it's a nice, tight six episodes, and then you're done.
I love that the wider community is starting to recognize it. I mean,
yes.
That, you know, with nominations for acting as well as writing and other stuff.
All right, let's move on. Thumbs up. Next up, we're going to talk about Rings of Power, episodes 3 and 4. And apparently, I am the sole voice on this podcast who is still enjoying Rings of Power. I will. And so I'm going to get my stuff out really fast so you guys can poo-poo all you want. As much as I love the pilot, and we saw everything from Sauron's perspective, which I thought was very different and really fascinating. The season premiere, right. Sorry, I said the pilot. So from the season premiere, as much as I really love that, I've found that as we've now gone more into these episodes, it is the least thing that I like, because it feels like they're hitting the same dead horse of he's manipulating people. Look, he's getting away with manipulating more people. Look, he's manipulating these people more. Look, look how he's manipulating. And I'm over it. I'm really over it. And some of it is just how he talks, but some of it he is genuinely using like kind of magic. Cause I think what Celebrimbor, oh wow, I said that right. The way that he's talking to him, at first I was like, how is he convincing him? It doesn't make sense. But then you realize some of it is magic. Like he is genuinely using magic to deceive and to put blinders over his eyes and to make him paranoid. He's doing stuff to him to get this result. And the more you see that, you're like, oh, this makes more sense. But it makes his character to me less interesting. And so now whenever we go to making the rings and Sauron and Celebrimbor, I'm like, this storyline again. So I get this. That's the only storyline that I am now kind of over. I'm like, can we just skip to the part where the rings are done and let's just like go from there? I'm kind of over it. However, the other storylines with the other characters, I'm still engaged in, especially when you get to not Gandalf, who is totally Gandalf, dude.
The stranger.
Yeah, like I said, Gandalf, when we get to him and we introduce Bombadil. And we introduce that character to him and we find out about the Dark Wizard and we get all of that stuff. Like that stuff I'm finding super fascinating. And then we get the hoof. What are the short people? What are they called? They're not called hobbits. They're called
Harfoots.
What are they called? They're the Harfoots, but that's actually a family name. So you have the Harfoots, and then you have the people that are in the desert that are the something or other.
Yeah, I forgot what they call the desert people.
Forgot but the desert one. They're all but then you realize that those are just family names.
Halfling is a good
thank you. Halfling is actually the generic term. And but you realize that all of that stuff is kind of interesting. Like I'm enjoying all those other stories. And the elves are so arrogant and so annoying, but that's always been true. And then the stuff with the dwarves, I'm thoroughly enjoying how the ring on the king has started to change his personality and is starting to make him greedy. And they're like, what does this mean? And so I'm really thoroughly enjoying those stories. And even the story on, God, what's the humans that live in the water? What are the
Numenor?
Numenor is hot and cold for me. So it depends on who the focus is on. If we're on the guy who is now king, I hate that stuff. Like he's so ridiculously obviously two-dimensional.
You might be getting a little ahead of the episode. I think he just in the last episode, he was just
we're on episode three and four. We're on three and four. He took over in episode two. So
you're talking about the people.
The people where
the
water.
Eagle selected him.
Yeah, that happened in
the,
yeah.
the Eagle. Two. Eagle just selected him in episode four.
Four.
Oh, yeah. Did it?
No. Yeah. No. Not yeah. at all.
No.
No. Yes. Not at all.
The Eagle selected him in the latest episode.
No, it didn't. In the latest episode, I'm not going to go into it now. But a lot of other stuff went on.
We're talking about episode four. I think you're ahead, Allison. We're behind what's airing.
I am ahead, but I'm saying the Eagle selected him in the episode that Libya is talking about.
Episode three.
Yes.
I thought it was before that. Go ahead, tag in.
Here's my problem. They don't know how to pace the stories. And Arondir, arguably one of my favorite characters, because we finally get an elf who's not Anglo, you know, the brown elf played by a Latino actor. We didn't see him at all in episodes one and two. And they had a major storyline at the end of first season. It's like, figure out how to pace your different plot lines equally and evenly and don't spend so much time on plot lines that repeat themselves.
Because yeah, the Sauron storyline is 100% repeating itself.
They're making really bad choices in how to order their episodes. So we get long stretches of stuff where, Sauron still is still manipulating Celebrimbor, And still, and then they're trying to catch, and they're, you know, the forces of darkness are stopping them. There's so much that I rewatched. I think I said this last time, but the first 12 minutes of Fellowship of the Ring basically tells a good chunk of the backstory you need for the classic trilogy. And they're stretching out a lot of stuff that's not that interesting into whole episodes. Get to the point, people. You know,
I mean, like I said, I'm enjoying some of this. Some of the stuff the Sauron stuff, I'm really not, but the rest of it, I am enjoying though.
They're just not doing. You've got so many different plot. You've got the elves. You've got the ones with Sauron. The ones not with Sauron. You've got the dwarves. You've got the Numenoreans. You've got the halflings and the stranger.
And much of that, I'm still enjoying. That's what I'm saying. But I'm enjoying
But they're not dividing them up evenly among episodes because you've got this whole plot line with what happened to Arendir and the kid's mom. And we just find out backwards, oh, she died.
That's because the actress isn't there.
So they lost the actress. But
the problem with it for me, because, you know, I went into this really, really wanting to like this show. Okay. And I keep every week that I tune in, I think, you know, please, are you going to right the ship and let me like this show? And they keep disappointing me. And I think part of the reason Tom was just saying, well, there's one element here and one element there and one element over on the other side. And that's the thing. They had started to bring characters together and now they've scattered them to the four winds again. And so instead of having a cohesive story with maybe a B plot someplace, you've got all these separate elements and they are not all equally interesting, as has been brought up, and they are completely sectioned off from each other. So they're not relating to each other anymore. And I find myself, first of all, I hate the Numenorean stuff. I think it's tedious as hell. If I'm waiting for the wave to go and just wash over the whole city so we can just be finished with it, just end it all, put them out of my misery. It's just boring. It's tedious. The stuff with Isildur and now I'm blanking on his name.
Arendir.
I should be interested in that. But Arendir is still interesting for the 5 seconds that we get of him per episode. But Isildur, who's going to be a great hero, is boring the hell out of me, and he comes off like an idiot. Celebrimbor comes off like a moron most of the time. And I just, the only thing that I really find a saving grace in this series is the stuff with the dwarves. You know, if they were telling us a story about the dwarves and their city and how, you know, they raise the evil from the depths and all of that, I would be happy to watch that. But everything else is not equally interesting. The stranger stuff, I'm sorry, I'm not finding all that great. We just keep bouncing between all of these different segments without anything really tying them back together again. And even though we know narratively all this stuff does eventually dovetail, the fact that we're forced to watch it as separate elements constantly is just taxing. I think they've got all this lore that they want to put together. They're just not doing it well.
Let me add a little bit of light. Like the only thing I've liked in the first four episodes so far is when Arendir gets reintroduced for this season. That is a heck of an action sequence and a heck of a, hey, I'm back. So I loved his fight sequence to say he was back. That was very cool. The other thing connected to him, you see, the only thing I liked was when he was on screen, is when Isildur kind of tries to reintroduce himself to Arendir. And Arendir is like, elves, our memory doesn't fade. I was like, he basically said the North remembers. So I liked, I like that.
Very good.
But otherwise, I would agree with everything else. I think that the structure is just horribly paced and put together. I also think the dialogue itself is just, even if you did the same structure and had better dialogue, dialogue, I can hang with it, but I would agree with the term tedious for the rest of the episode.
All right, let's wrap this up. Let's wrap this up. Some people on this podcast are giving it thumbs down, and I don't completely agree, but there you go. Take it for what you want. All right, next up, we're going to talk Only Murders in the Building. And this is a show I think we all can agree we're enjoying. And then we're going to do episodes 3 and 4. And where do we leave? Oh, this is the one where we deal with the Christmas guy. Is that episode 4 or episode 3?
Episode 3. They shadow, all of the characters shadow their actors, or the actors all shadow their people. Right.
That's why they end up in the Christmas. What's her name? Who? Eva Longoria.
Eva Longoria.
Yeah,
she's doing a great job.
Yes, she shows up at Kumanji's house and apartment. Like, oh, Chris, apartment. Yeah, said his name wrong. So they go to his house and they're like, "You love Christmas, and tinsel was found at the murder scene, so you must be the killer." And he's like, "I hate Christmas. Christmas sucks."
Trying to accuse somebody so they can wrap it up.
No. And, oh, right. She wanted to wrap it up
and
in time for her dinner.
I love how she was like.
Go ahead. You said.
Yes. And wait, shout out to Roger Federer, because like that was like one of the most random, like she says Michelle Obama, and then she says somebody else for dinner. Like she's like going to this important dinner. And then she mentions my favorite tennis player who retired 2 years ago. And I was so happy. I was like, what? Did she just say Roger Federer? I was like, I love this show. But it just goes to show you how random, like, you know, and the writers, obviously, somebody is a tennis fan on that show for sure, because not everybody knows who Roger Federer is. So I did love that little piece. And I loved how when she said to him that clearly Christmas and fitness were very important to Kumail, you know, like that shout out to, you know, wink wink to his working out and to his buff body. I mean, you know, they,
well, you really
they,
couldn't I thought tell it, with those Christmas sweaters on, but
that's from the Eternals though.
Well, that's why he had to lift up that sweater and show us what was underneath that sweater. To make sure, so they drove that nail home, and that they and so I thought that was cute that was like a they brought that in. Although I don't know, I thought he could have been funnier. Like I was expecting, I don't know what I was expecting with that whole scene, but it like I don't know, I like because I think he's really funny, and I thought that. He didn't shine in the scenes the way that I thought. I thought he was going to be even more comic relief. But for me, I thought Eva Longoria like took over that whole scene.
She was the highlight. That's true.
Yeah, she was the highlight for me instead of him. I thought he was going to be, but she was really actually the one that was really funny. And then I loved Galifianakis and Martin Short doing the whole montage.
That was a hilarious subplot that Nakis is like, this is just nothing. Not
narcissistic. Yeah. Loser. And
so
then,
great.
But they're doing the montage of them like swinging on the like luggage rack and like going out for lunch and all of that. That was really hilarious. Yeah. And then I think what was it? What's his name? The one that's doing shadowing Steve Martin,
Eugene Levy.
Eugene Levy.
Thank you. Yeah, Eugene Levy. Yeah, that one. I can't remember so much where they went to go visit the guy with the patch. So like,
they had the stupid idea of how to get him to lift his eye
lift
patch
up the
up.
Patch.
And both of their ideas were pretty equally dumb.
Stupid.
But I have to say that Steve Martin's idea was the worst, and I was just like, "What are you guys doing?" Like it was so. It was so ridiculous, but and I like that Eugene Levy ended up getting punched in the nose for the trouble. I thought that was highly amusing.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, so that I thought that was fun. That episode where they were being shadowed, and then I don't know if you want me to go into episode 4.
Yeah,
episode four. The next episode was where they ran into what's his name? Ugh, the actor who never ages, but he actually looked like he aged.
Paul Rudd.
Paul Rudd. Thank you.
Paul Rudd.
Paul Rudd. He's like Dorian Gray.
But it was the stunt man.
It was his stunt man.
Stunt double.
It was a stunt double.
The Irish stunt double.
He played his own stunt.
That was the worst Irish accent.
I was wondering who was doing this Irish accent at the beginning. Like, they start out with the narrator, and I'm like, who's that voice? Who in the show is Irish or fake Irish? I don't understand. And then when they revealed it, that was hilarious. It was hysterical. I just could not stop laughing. I've got to say that these two episodes were a really mixed bag for me. Because the first one, episode 3, I have to admit, was the first time I have ever seen an episode on the show that I actively did not like.
I almost
never laughed at. Everything just felt like it was forced. It was trying to be funny and instead ended up stupid. It felt like it was kind of beneath it. It's like they couldn't think of really good material to use with their guest stars, and this was the best we got. And the result is that especially I think Eva Longoria and Zach Galifianakis came off the worst. I hated their characters.
Really?
I loathed their characters. They may be really great, nice people, but the characters of themselves on the show were just intolerable. And the worst kind of stereotypes of, you know, what a celebrity is supposed to be. It's like last year they did Matthew Broderick and he was playing an awful version of himself, but it was funny and it was specific. And with this, it was just generic, awful celebrity.
Generic self-obsessed celebrity.
Exactly.
Allison.
It just didn't come off that great. So I hated this episode. However, it was followed by one of what I thought was one of the funniest episodes.
Hold up, Allison. Malik had something he wanted to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Allison, I'm not sure how drinking games go, but I believe you're supposed to take a shot when you stutter on Galifianakis' last name. I believe that's how it works.
I would not be able to stand up if that was the case.
All right, go ahead. Next episode. I thought he was going to say something more serious than that. But go ahead.
Yeah, no, the next episode really made up for it because then it was everything was firing on all cylinders, and bringing in Paul Rudd as the drunken Irish stuntman version of his character was just, and the thing that was funny was that they went with all the tropes of that, having him run off screen and actually be replaced by a stuntman when he does the roll over the car and things like, it was just priceless. It was beautifully done. And combining all of that with the genuinely affecting stuff with about Saz, and that Steve Martin's character didn't realize she was in all that pain all the time, years. You know, and having these little flashbacks, and one of them after being hit on the head with a real bottle, as to, you know, the things that they'd been through and what she wanted in life was really fascinating and really affecting. So I thought just in terms of just the feels and in terms of the funny, I thought that episode just made up for it and everything was working with that one.
Don't forget Mabel's discovery about the empty apartment.
Yes.
Oh yeah, you had to squat
the
house.
The subleasing. Yeah.
Right. Malik, yeah. You haven't talked yet. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I'd agree. Episode 3 wasn't that interesting to me. I wouldn't go as far as say I hated it, but I didn't particularly enjoy it. I'm trying to remember when Steve Martin and Eugene Levy did the yes and, was that 3 or 4?
That was probably 3.
Okay.
3, yeah.
That was I appreciated that because that whole joke was about how you do improv.
Improv.
So for people who know that that's one of the rules of improv, I thought it was pretty funny. I wondered for people who aren't familiar with that, whether that scene worked for them or not. But I kind of liked how Steve Martin kept doing the yes and to try to get to the next thing. But overall, episode three, I didn't find particularly interesting. I'd also say that Paul Rudd was the star of episode four. Even though everything around the stunt workers was pretty silly, it was interesting. So everything around the stunt workers was interesting for me for that episode. The rest of it, not as much. But yeah, we'll keep watching.
Let's wrap that one up. I'd say overall, I mean, for the most part, thumbs up.
Wait, I have to say something.
Okay,
I
go ahead.
Loved, because I loved, I'm not even an iPhone user, an Apple user, but that scene where Martin Short was talking to his tablet and he was like, brightness on, off, Susie, brightness, Susie. And I was like, Susie. And I was like laughing so hard. I mean, he is hilarious. I actually laughed out loud when he screamed Susie at his tablet. Cause I spend all my life listening to all you iPhone users talk to Siri, and for him to start screaming Susie just made me laugh. As an Android user, I had to laugh. And I was like, I just love Martin Short so much on the show. He's just ridiculous. He's absolutely like and he hasn't fallen into caricature, because his character is a caricature. But
yeah,
like,
I was about to say, yeah, he is.
But the way he acts it just is sublime. Like, it doesn't make me feel like he's playing a clown, even though he is a clown. Do you know what I mean?
That was a nice bit. Yeah, that was a nice bit.
Yeah, but we got to wrap this up. We got one more show to talk about. We got to wrap this up. So still thumbs up, but good point. Next up, we're going to talk Fight Night, and we're going to talk the first two episodes of Fight Night. And what Fight Night is, for those who don't know, it's the initial part of the show is based on a true story, and then the back half is based on rumor, speculation, and mythology. So the things that happened for real is that there is the first fight that Muhammad Ali gets to have after he gets out of jail for not going to Vietnam and changing his name to Muhammad Ali. This is the first fight he has in Atlanta, and nobody wants him there. And so they have to have a police detail guard him. And the person who guards him is one of the first black detectives in Atlanta. So that all that part's true. The other thing that's true is they host this party hosted by the biggest gangsters in the area who want to go to the fight, and they want to have an after party. And so that part is true. And then that party gets robbed. And in the worst way possible that you can do a robbery. Because I was watching this robbery and I'm like, well, that I think that's a little later. But anyway, the part where the robbery happens of the party and the fight, all that stuff is true. After the robbery, all the rest of that is speculation, mythology, making it up. Nobody knows the real story. So that's all fiction. So that is an interesting way to come at this series, and I find it fascinating. So we're going to talk about the first two episodes, which is Kevin Hart's character of Chicken Man is trying to move up in the world. He's running a numbers game, and they know the lottery is coming. So that means he needs to find an alternate way of making income. And so he sees these gangsters coming in for the fight as an opportunity for him to pitch himself as their inside man in Atlanta, right? So he's doing all this hustling, and we're seeing him. Taraji P. Henson is playing not his wife, because he's got a wife. So she's playing like his on the side girlfriend.
His mistress. Yeah.
His mistress. And so the two of them are scheming. And then we have Sam Jackson, who is the biggest gangster in New York. And then we have Don Cheadle plays the cop. And we have, who's one of the other gangsters? What's his name? Terrence Howard.
Terrence Howard
plays like the sidekick of Sam Jackson. So you have all these big names in this thing, which is fantastic. And it just gives it this real kind of texture that they're. The only complaint I have is the guy playing Muhammad Ali. I think he's a good actor, but I think that his impersonation of Muhammad Ali is not good. So it makes my brain bleed every time he's trying to do Muhammad Ali. But then when he stops doing that and actually is talking to Don Cheadle, I'm like, oh, he's a good actor. And so it's such a weird thing to have this dichotomy of a guy who I'm like, please stop what you're doing. And oh, keep doing that. So anyway, I really like the first two episodes as far as set up for the story, as far as setting up the stakes. I thought they did a really good job. And I like that at the beginning, you set up kind of, they do that thing where you see the end, where you see Sam Jackson holding the gun to Kevin Hart's head and telling him, face. You set me up and blah, blah, blah. And then we rewind to find out how we got to that point. So that usually isn't effective, but in this particular case, I thought it was. Other people's thoughts. Go for it.
What a great idea for a limited series. Great Oscar caliber cast. Probably one of the best things I've liked Kevin Hart in, because he plays kind of a variation of his typical screen persona, but knowing that this is based on a real person, that and it's a more serious role for him.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, I mean, they spent some money on this and it was well spent. You have a feature film worthy director. I mean, I'm in. I mean, I agree with you. It's tricky when you do biopics or biographical related things where the main characters are so close in time to us that we remember seeing the real thing. So it's almost, right. Unless they're uncanny, it's almost a lose-lose situation. And yeah, the guy doesn't look like him at all, and he tries to sound like him, but it's just not. I almost wish he had just figured a different approach. Don't try to do the exact same vocal quality, just do the cadence maybe. But that's a quibble. But man, the cast, the clothes, the hairstyles, and the cast.
It's really
and,
good.
And Sam Jackson in the role he was born. I mean, this is a great role. As the only one with an actual Oscar.
And I also like the way they talk about Atlanta. I thought the way they talked about it is kind of like this almost mystical place that they had the right to be there, and it was their birthright, and all of that stuff was just really, really well done. I thought that was great. Malik, your thoughts? I see it percolating.
So for me, this is similar to seeing a beautiful, wonderfully well done profile on a dating page, but when you go out on the date, it's like it's not what I expected when I saw it on paper. So I think everything from, you know, Will Packer directing, producing this, to Craig Brewer directing it, to all of the incredible actors who are part of the cast, when I saw all of that, I expected to have a different experience watching it. I didn't have a great experience watching this. I think there are some story elements in terms of the order in which they reveal things that makes it difficult to appreciate. So the fact that Kevin Hart is married and has a mistress, they show him with his mistress first, and then that he's married is a reveal, which is fine. But then you have a scene where we're supposed to appreciate the relationship he has with his wife, where she's the reveal. I think emotionally, I don't really feel for him given the order in which they did their reveal. There are a number of other things where, so for example, we know that the robbery is going to happen. The robbers, we see some scenes of them being robbers, and then we go back and get their backstory. Well, doing it in that order, I also don't feel for the robbers. If you had shown me the backstory and shown me how and why they made the decision to become robbers, I might have felt differently. But I think the order in which they structure things makes it difficult for me to appreciate some of these folks. I have a different take on Kevin Hart. He's not a good actor, and he's not strong enough to helm this film with all of these other incredible actors around him. He's the heart and the center of this. I called it a film, of this series, and he's not a good enough actor to hold that center from my standpoint. I love the other actors. I love Sam Jackson, Don Cheadle, Terrence Howard, Taraji, Henson. All of them are doing great work, but I'm not very excited about it. The other thing is there are some historical things that they are getting wrong that they could have looked up very easily. There's a moment where the sheriff is talking about how Dr. King was just killed, so we can't allow that to happen on our watch. But Dr. King wasn't killed in Atlanta. He was killed in Memphis.
Memphis.
So that line makes absolutely no sense. And I don't understand how it went through all the people who have to see it and nobody told them that line doesn't make sense.
Well, I didn't get from it that he meant it to place in his Atlanta. City. It's yeah. just, it's like he was saying, you know, that happened, you know, just recently, and it's not going to happen here.
Yeah, that's not, I didn't read it that
but
way.
He said again, though.
I didn't read it that way either.
He said again, but that. I think somebody should say something about that line. They also talk about the underground in Atlanta, and that underground mall wasn't around during the timeline of this film. Mm-hmm. So they just have some historical things that are off, I think. But in general, I'm not very excited about this series. Or rather, I'm excited about what I thought it could be, and that wasn't my experience.
So the execution for you is off.
Yes.
I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, I really loved it.
I did too. As far as Kevin Hart's character is concerned, I think he's fine in the role, and I don't see him as the heart of the series so much as the glue of the series. He's a problematic person. He's a problematic character. I spend a lot of time wondering why his wife doesn't leave him. he's you know, chronically in trouble all the time. And so I think that you're just supposed to accept him on that level. Yes, we are hoping he doesn't get killed and all of that. But at the same time, I mean, we are allowed to see that he is a difficult person, and he has a lot of issues. He's not an honest guy, he's criminally inclined,
he's not a good guy, so you're not necessarily supposed to be on his side,
right? I mean, you don't want him to die, but at the same time you understand that, you know, this guy is not a saint, you know, and so you don't identify with him necessarily. The rest of the characters I thought were fascinating. I love all of the different gangsters. They're just incredibly colorful, especially the one played by Terrence Howard.
Oh my god he just wants to kill everybody. He just wants everybody.
That is just hilarious. I mean, oh my god. And that hair, that oh,
oh
god.
Wow.
That
hair is crazy.
It's going to date me, but every girl I knew in junior high school had that hairdo.
I call it the Farrah Fawcett blowout. Yeah.
That's just, I think the whole cast is terrific. Again, though, I do agree that the low point is Muhammad Ali. The guy who's playing that is not convincing. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, we don't have to worry about that for too long. But that is one part that doesn't really work. But the rest of it, I think, was fascinating. The sets, the costumes, the music that they have for this show is just on point.
And that
really enjoyed that.
Yeah. All right. I think that's everybody, right? So I've already watched like the next two episodes because I think they've aired like six or something at this point, so I'm not quite caught up, but I've watched at least two more, and I'm thoroughly enjoying it because stuff just goes crazy. But I will agree with Malik about the flashback with the criminals. After I saw the flashback, I didn't feel like I knew them any better than I did before, so, and it didn't make me sympathize with them in any way whatsoever. I didn't go, oh, I hope they pull this off, you know. It wasn't anything like that. So my sympathies are still with, which is still kind of weird, I guess, with the gangsters. I'm still with Sam Jackson and those guys. And I want Don Cheadle to do well. So Don Cheadle is really the character that I care about the most. So for me, he's kind of the heart, because he's the character that I want to do well, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So
he's the authority figure.
Well, not just the authority figure, just what he's going through. Like, he's the lone black detective in this office of a bunch of racist people.
Racist cops.
Yeah, all trying to get him to fail. They want him to get killed. They want him to do poorly. Nobody's listening to him. And he is trying to be upstanding in a way that nobody else understands. But what's really cool is I also like his conflict with Muhammad Ali, because they think they're coming from ideological opposite sides, but they're not really, but they think they are. And so having them be forced to spend this time together, I think is also interesting. So
the one flashback I thought worked well was when we find out that he's the one who busted Kevin Hart years before.
I don't think we get that yet. We don't get that in episode two. Oh, okay.
It's in episode two. But where the lawyer has predicated his whole case on racist cop, and then Don Cheadle walks in, and the judge is like, 3 years hard labor. That was a brilliant use of setup payoff.
That was pretty good. All right, let's wrap this up. I'd say, what is it? 3 out of 4 thumbs up, and then 1 thumbs down.
3 out of 4 TV campers recommend Fight Night.
All right. If you guys have any questions or comments, you leave them at tvcampfire@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter or on Facebook. Listen to us on sci-fi.radio, iTunes, and 6 Degrees of Geek. And we'll talk to you guys next time. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.